Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on Caltrans' involvement in the bentonite spill in Southern Humboldt, the latest inside Humboldt courts, and Soham Health gaining MRI services. But first, some local updates and alerts. This is KMUD News. Starting off with a controlled burn update in Southern Humboldt from the Humboldt County Prescribed Burn Association. Tomorrow, Wednesday, July 1st, the plan is for a barbed goat grass controlled burn at the Southern Humboldt Community Park in Garberville. On Thursday, July 2nd, there is a planned grassland prescribed burn involving the Bryceland Fire Department near Hestis Rock. Please do not immediately report a fire in these areas if you see smoke. All controlled burns are weather permitting. From the Trinity County Sheriff's Department, the Trinity County Sheriff's Office has concluded a two-day search and recovery operation following a boating incident at Ruth Lake that resulted in the death of a Cottonwood man. On Saturday, June 27th, at approximately 1:30 a.m., Trinity County Sheriff's Office dispatch received a 911 call reporting a missing person at Ruth Lake in southern Trinity County. Preliminary investigation determined that three individuals were operating a small fishing boat near the Boy Scout campground when the vessel capsized approximately 30 yards from shore. All three occupants initially attempted to right the boat but were unsuccessful and began swimming towards the shore. Two of those occupants safely reached the shore. The third occupant began experiencing distress in the water and was unable to make it to the shore. Despite the efforts of the other occupants to locate him by calling out and searching the area, they were unable to find him and contacted 911 for assistance. Deputies responded immediately and requested assistance from the United States Coast Guard. A Coast Guard helicopter from Air Station Humboldt Bay conducted an aerial search of the area but was unable to locate the missing individual. The Trinity County Sheriff's Office also deployed its patrol boat to conduct a surface search, which was unsuccessful. Trinity County Search and Rescue was then activated to conduct a more extensive search operation. Search and rescue personnel, including dive team members, utilized the Sheriff's Office patrol boat to search the area. Deputies also employed side-scan sonar equipment and an unmanned aircraft system in an effort to locate the missing individual. Despite these extensive efforts, the subject was not located on the first day of the search. At that time, mutual aid resources were requested from the Shasta County Sheriff's Office dive team. On Sunday, June 28th, personnel from the Trinity County Sheriff's Office, Trinity County Search and Rescue, and the Shasta County Sheriff's Office dive team resumed search operations. During the second day of the search, divers located and recovered the missing individual from the lake. The deceased has been identified as Dylan Malcomi Harley Asbury, 25, of Cottonwood, California. The Trinity County Sheriff's Office extended sincere condolences to Mr. Asbury's family and friends during this difficult time. They also wish to thank the United States Coast Guard, Trinity County Search and Rescue Volunteers, the Shasta County Sheriff's Office dive team, and all personnel who assisted in this coordinated search and recovery effort. Next is exciting new research from Cal Poly Humboldt. A newly published study in Current Biology is reframing a fundamental question in plant evolution: what made trees possible? The study suggests that surviving drought may have been a powerful force shaping the evolution of trees. It challenges conventional ideas about what defines a tree, rather than viewing trees simply as plants with trunks and wood. The researchers argue that a defining feature may be their ability to add and replace water transport tissues throughout their lives. Becoming tree-like and growing taller to compete for sunlight, they argue, required solving a critical challenge, moving water through a massive organism. To grow tall, trees must move water upward from their roots to their trunks, branches, and leaves. But as they grew larger, keeping more and more water moving became increasingly difficult, especially when water became scarce. Xylem, the microscopic tubes that carry water through plants, can become blocked by air bubbles called embolisms. If those blockages spread, they can cut off water to the rest of the plant and kill it. As plants evolved larger and more extensive water transport systems, they became more vulnerable to embolisms and hydraulic failure. But tree-like plants, the researchers propose, started to compartmentalize these systems to limit the spread of damage. The strategy is similar to a power grid with circuit breakers or a ship with watertight compartments. If one section fails, the entire system doesn't go down with it. That led researchers to a new conclusion. The evolution of trees may have been driven by the need to move more water through their increasingly taller bodies and survive hydraulic failure. From the Shasta Trinity National Forest. The Shasta Trinity National Forest is enacting fire restrictions to protect natural resources and provide for public safety, effective July 1st. Fire restrictions in effect across the Shasta Trinity National Forest include building, maintaining, attending, or using a fire, campfire, or stove fire, except in the areas identified within a developed recreation site or within a designated fire safe site. Restrictions also include operating an internal combustion engine off of National Forest System roads and trails, except boats on a water surface. Up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. When it comes to responsibility for local bentonite slurry dumping incidents, Caltrans is passing the buck. KMUD News reports. When the public was first alerted in early June to the presence of bentonite drilling slurry in southern Humboldt's Redwood Creek, it set off a series of questions. Many of these questions centered on who was actually responsible, and specifically which agency was providing oversight of the fiber optic drilling projects alongside Highway 101 in southern Humboldt that created the waste. The first responsibility was to clean up the actual bentonite drilling slurry that was still in Redwood Creek and its tributaries. This was handled by the North Coast Water Board and Humboldt County's Planning and Building Department. The North Coast Water Board issued abatement orders to the property owner and multiple subcontractors on July 17th after County Planning and Building's stop work order from June 9th. All parties, to our knowledge, have followed instructions from these agencies, but now questions have turned to how did this happen in the first place? Why did a subcontractor on a state-funded fiber optic drilling project on a Caltrans right-of-way believe they had the right to contact a private property owner to dump drilling material without direct approval? KMUD News has been in contact with Caltrans for weeks to get answers on some of these questions. Specifically, we wanted to know why a proper environmental review was deemed not necessary. As previously reported, Caltrans District 1 gave an environmental review exemption to the Southern Humboldt Fiber Optic Drilling Project on April 8th. The exemption cites state code, allowing for easier approvals for broadband internet projects that are part of a public right-of-way. Just like the Caltrans right-of-way along Highway 101 in Southern Humboldt. Initially, when contacting Caltrans about the approval process for the broadband projects that led to the bentonite spill, our questions were diverted to agencies that help manage Caltrans itself. First, Caltrans told us to contact the California Government Operations Agency, who in turn referred us to a contact at the California State Transportation Agency. After asking the California State Transportation Agency for a response to our questions on multiple occasions, we eventually received a response directly from Caltrans, completing the circle of communication. It was an unusual interaction for a news organization and government agencies to go through a game of not it when it came to relevant questions on the events leading to the bentonite spill in southern Humboldt. The initial answers we received from Caltrans on June 16th didn't satisfy our questions, and we kept digging and asking follow-ups. Here's what we were able to learn, with answers to our questions provided by Christopher Clark, the Deputy Division Chief of Public Affairs for Caltrans. Christopher provided the following statement, quote, The broadband project in Humboldt County is privately owned and built and is not a Caltrans-led effort. The department's only role is as an encroachment permit issuer. Caltrans authorizes individuals and contractors to access state right-of-ways in a safe manner through an approved encroachment permit process. Approved permits are limited to encroachments on state-owned right-of-way and feature specific language intended to defend the environment, protect public safety, and provide the permit holder with information needed to safely perform the work. Permit holders are expected to follow all state, federal, and local laws as outlined in each specific permit. A thorough environmental review of the potential impacts posed by the project scope was conducted with the permittee during a process that spanned several months. In the course of this detailed assessment, several environmental factors were discussed prior to Caltrans providing an approved permit. End quote. We followed up this statement by asking Caltrans to clarify that approval for fiber optic drilling projects were not put through a formal environmental review, and that they are relying on general laws regarding proper material disposal as being sufficient to guide drilling projects in our region. To the question on environmental review, Christopher Clark of Caltrans stated, quote, "As it pertains to the encroachment permitting process, Caltrans conducted a thorough review of potential environmental impacts associated with the permittee's scope of work," end quote. And to our question on bentonite slurry disposal, Christopher Clark of Caltrans stated, quote, "Management and proper disposal of drilling fluids is required as part of compliance with local, state, and federal laws, such as the Clean Water Act," end quote. We were mystified by these responses, and especially how an agency can claim sufficient environmental review when no formal environmental review took place. Caltrans had previously stated in documents approving the project that drilling activity would not cause a significant impact to the environment. We then turned to John Ford, Director of Planning and Building for Humboldt County, to see what his response might be to what Caltrans told us. John responded promptly by email this morning, Tuesday, June 30th. We asked him specifically if he was looking into any changes in how planning and building interacts with state-funded projects to avoid this situation in the future. John Ford responded, quote, "Typically, the county has no jurisdiction over state projects. We do not issue permits. The anticipated work is in a Caltrans right-of-way. In this case, there was the need to dispose of drilling waste, and rather than following best management practices and using the industry standard, the subcontractors pursue a low bid, which did not account for appropriate disposal," end quote. All of this leads to questions on how vulnerable Humboldt County might be in regards to future state-funded infrastructure projects in our region. For now, the system behind these large-scale infrastructure projects seems based on asking subcontractors to simply follow existing state and local laws to avoid situations that cause the bentonite drilling slurry spill in southern Humboldt. That alone may not be enough to protect fragile ecosystems and specifically the Eel River watershed. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. In the latest Inside Humboldt Courts, Ryan Hudson brings us an update on the Bridgeville human trafficking bust and the status of a murder case out of Hoopa.
This is Inside Humboldt Courts. I'm Ryan Hudson. Your courthouse rundown includes a Hoopa community still waiting on a trial date more than a year after a teenager's death, and a case you might remember, a Swiftwater rescue that uncovered a labor trafficking case at a fully licensed cannabis farm. First, in the case of the People versus Georgi Tonev. A worker left alone on a remote cannabis farm near Bridgeville, reportedly with no food and no pay, found a way to ask for help. That person made a call to the Mexican consulate. That phone call set off a labor trafficking investigation, and it would take a Swiftwater rescue team to actually reach the victim. After winding its way through the court system, every human trafficking count against Tonev was ultimately dropped. He pleaded guilty to felony wage theft directly tied to the workers, along with tax violations and unlawful marijuana cultivation related to the grow operation itself. Here's how the case unfolded. In February of this year, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office got a call from the Mexican consulate in San Francisco. A worker had reported being stranded on a cannabis cultivation site on a remote property northeast of Bridgeville. The sheriff's office marijuana enforcement team tried to reach the property, but could not. Significant flooding had cut off the road access, so they had to call in backup. They called the Search and Rescue Swiftwater Rescue Team. Together with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, they navigated the floodwaters to reach the site. What they found, according to investigators, was failing unsanitary infrastructure with black mold growing on the walls of an indoor grow room. Days later, deputies served search warrants on three separate properties, two near Bridgeville and one near Garberville. This was not an illegal grow. The cultivation site was state licensed. The violations weren't about permits, they were about how workers were treated. That's when they arrested the man at the center of it all, Georgi Tonev, a Bridgeville resident. Tonev is a U.S. citizen, according to his attorney, who says he's lived in the country for more than 25 years now, originally from Bulgaria. Following his arrest, he was booked on human trafficking charges and held on $465,000 bail. His private attorney, Andrea Sullivan, pushed back hard on the trafficking allegations. Sullivan had previously told reporters that her client is an immigrant himself, someone with, in her words, quote, a soft spot for people who came to this country and try to make a better life, unquote. She argued that the alleged victims, in her words, quote, preyed against her client's generosity, unquote. His attorney emphasized that there were no allegations of threats, no claims that the workers were threatened if they did not do their job. The case took a turn at a preliminary hearing this spring where a judge found insufficient evidence to support trafficking allegations involving two of the workers and dismissed those counts earlier this spring. However, the remaining trafficking allegation was dropped as well, with Tonev pleading guilty to felony wage theft, tax-related violations, and unlawful marijuana cultivation. The charge of false imprisonment was also dropped as part of a plea agreement. Sentencing for Tonev has not yet been scheduled. Next, in the case of the People versus Celine Lincoln and William Warren, a 17-year-old's death on a quiet road outside of Hoopa is still without a trial date, more than a year later. Dylan Andrew Moon was shot on Little Moon Lane in March of 2025. He died of his injuries a few days later. The shooting set off a wave of fear and anger in the Hoopa community. The Hoopa Valley Tribe offered a $10,000 reward for information. They held an emergency community meeting. Tribal Chairman Joe Davis later said the tribe was turning its focus toward preventing the kind of alleged gang violence and youth conflict that led to Moon's death. Celine Lincoln and William Warren, both adults, were arrested within days of the shooting. They face murder charges with gang-related enhancements. Prosecutors announced last spring that they would not seek the death penalty against either defendant. They told the court they discussed that decision with Moon's mother. Both men remain held without bail, and both have pleaded not guilty. A preliminary hearing, which will determine whether there's enough evidence to send the case to trial, is now reset for July 28th. For KMUD News and Redheaded Black Belt, I'm Ryan Hudson.
So Home Health is adding MRI scanning to its list of available services, KMO News reports. The Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District, also known as SoHum Health, is adding an MRI machine to its available imaging services. The mobile MRI unit, provided via a partnership with Heritage Imaging, will be available every Saturday of the month beginning July 11th. We spoke with Chelsea Brown, the outreach manager of SoHum Health, to learn more about the new MRI program. Chelsea spoke first on the reasoning behind the new MRI program and how mobile MRI machines give more options to rural healthcare providers.
SoHum Health is partnering with a company called Heritage Imaging, and they have MRI machine that is mobile. So it's on a tractor trailer, essentially, and they serve rural hospitals along the whole West Coast. They're actually based out of Idaho, I think, and they serve Washington and Oregon and places where maybe they don't have the space or the money to have their own MRI machine on site all the time. So we have set up this partnership with them, and they're now going to be at our hospital in Garberville every Saturday and scheduling appointments for MRIs on Saturday. So it'll hopefully be convenient for people that, you know, work full time, or maybe they're traveling from Eureka or elsewhere, and try to make it accessible for people and give people in the area another option to get an MRI closer to home.
Chelsea Brown of SoHum Health explained how there are no differences between imaging utilizing a mobile MRI versus permanently installed units.
There's no differences. And actually, what I've learned through this process is that a lot of the times, even if it is a permanently stationed MRI machine, they'll actually have it in like a modular building, because the insulation and parameters they need to be able to protect, it's basically a gigantic magnet. So it's kind of dangerous to have it close, or it has to have like really specific parameters for the walls and just protective measures. So our MRI machine is basically exactly the same as one you would get at a hospital that had a permanently fixed machine.
Chelsea emphasized how the mobile MRI service is a long-term solution, even after the new hospital is built in Garberville, and represents a cost-effective way to maintain MRI services for the healthcare district.
It is in the new hospital plan to have MRI available. Whether it will be there all the time or not will kind of depend on how this setup with Heritage goes. It's going to depend on the demand for the service and whether, you know, it makes financial sense to actually purchase our own machine or do a mobile situation. Because this company that we're working with that has a mobile MRI, they kind of do like a loop between five other rural hospitals. So it's kind of interesting that this setup is even available, but it definitely makes sense for making it more accessible in rural areas where the facilities or the just the finances make it cost prohibitive to have our own machines.
Chelsea Brown, outreach manager for SoHum Health, also spoke on how MRI services are the last step in the healthcare district offering a full range of diagnostic scanning services for patients, and how this will keep residents from having to travel long distances for these formerly specialty services.
Now that we've added MRI at SoHum Health, we now have all of the imaging modalities. So we have CT scans, ultrasound, we have 3D mammograms, and also X-ray. So people can ask their doctor if they get an order for any of those types of imaging scans. We're able to accommodate them now at SoHum Health, so we're really excited. And we know that oftentimes there's long wait times when people are scheduling at some of the larger facilities, and Our facility generally can get people in a lot faster just because we have a lower population. And so it's great that people will have another option. And maybe even if they live in like northern Humboldt or elsewhere, they wouldn't have to travel as far or wait as long if they had like a stat MRI or something that they wanted to get done faster. So we can have, be an option for people.
MRI scans are scheduled via provider referrals and usually need prior approval from insurance providers. If you are looking to have your provider refer you to Soham Health for imaging services, including MRI, have them call 707-923-3921 or visit sohumhealth.org/imaging for more information. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Biana Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also, thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Ryan Hudson. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located in the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.